It's the Lean Into Art Cast, the show where some visual storytellers get together, take a walk around some remote and dangerous topics, and hopefully come out unscathed but changed on the other side. My name is Jerzy Droz, cartoonist and teaching artist, and the other guy who sits in the co-host chair with me is Rob.
Hey, Jerzy. Yeah, I'm Rob Stenzinger. I do a lot of user experience and game design and whatnot. It's like you were saying, we co-host this thing, but we actually have a special guest this week with us. We have the third wheel, who's never a third wheel, because he brings he's ever present so much. He's like adding two more wheels to the podcast. Mr. Ryan Estrada.
Hi, everybody. How you doing?
Ryan Estrada of RyanEstrada.com, a guy who I just genuinely like as a person, but he's also one of my favorite internet people in the entire world. I'm continuously delighted by everything I see come out of Ryan Estrada's feeds. And we should say, before we get into curveball, this is going to be sort of an unofficial part three of a larger discussion we've been having together, guys, now that I think about it. A few episodes back, what episode was it? Episode 84 of the Lean Into Art Cast. Mm-hmm. We had a great discussion with Ryan about getting a reaction and showcasing yourself, right? So, like, getting noticed for the work that you do online. Mm-hmm. But there was also, like, some offline stuff in there as well. And then Ryan and I did a panel at ComfyCon this past weekend. What was that one about, Ryan?
I've been doing so many things. Like, what was that about? I've been doing a lot of videos and stuff. do you remember?
How to quit working for the man, yes. Right? I should say, yes. That was unfair of me to pitch that at you because you were in multiple panels, plus you've got the whole story, Broken Telephone Kickstarter going on, which you're doing videos for that. Doing a lot of stuff, but which we'll talk about in the discussion. But in the How to Quit Working for the Man panel that we did together on Google Plus, so there's a video that we'll link to in the show notes for this episode, we talked a lot about how to identify the work you want to do and how to present that to the world so that you can either start to get some creative independence for your work, make a living doing your own personal stuff. But part of that discussion, I think, was applicable to freelancing. And you, Ryan, brought it into the discussion by interviewing me a little bit about the difference between when I'm freelancing stuff like the RoboForce comic I'm doing right now versus doing my personal work. And it set off a light bulb for me, like saying, okay, let's do Return of the Jedi now, and let's bring it back around and you coalesce all these ideas we discussed in episode 84 of Lean Into Art and then the ComfyCon panel to say, okay, let's focus purely on the person who wants to freelance. Because I get a lot of emails about this from people saying, like, hey, Jerzy, I see that you're doing this work for all these different companies. How do I get started freelancing? How do I even begin? Where do I start with this kind of thing? And I don't think any of us want to go through like a definitive 1, 2, 3 step list. But Ryan, you did a post, and this relates to the whole story project. You did a post called How to Get Hired. You posted this on Medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, as I was editing my new book, it's a project where I hired 18 artists to illustrate 18 different stories, and I was just looking through Tumblr and looking through people whose art I know and just finding people that I'd never talked to and just that I really liked their work and people that I thought would work for different projects and just finding them and trying to hire them. And I kind of switched sides because before I was the one trying to get my work out there and hoping people would contact me. And I just thought that having been on both sides, it'd be helpful to do a post that might help people to see how to be ready for those experiences when they come.
So cool. So that's what we're going to talk about today is how to get hired, how to get your dream freelance gigs. But before we get into that, we got to do curveball. We always do curveball at the top to intellectually warm ourselves up. And in lieu of asking a question that is without a pat answer, I thought we could just riff a little bit about this news that dropped just tonight before we started recording that Fleen.com reported on and Ryan sounded the horn on. What happened recently with PC Mag?
Well, there's a magazine about computers called PC Magazine, and they did an article about the best web comics, and they just posted a bunch of examples of comics. And since it's a review, they don't have to ask permission to post those comics. Like normally, if a magazine is going to run comics, they'd pay for it, but it's fair use. So they just posted people's comics without their permission, didn't contact them. But the creepy thing is they contacted them after the article went out, not to tell them, ask permission or tell them their work was in it, but to say, it was like a sales email to say, hey, we said your comic is great. If you want to tell other people that we said your comic is great and maybe quote our article or post a screenshot, you can give us money. What a fantastic opportunity for you. So I just thought it was kind of creepy that they think that, which, like I said, it is fair use. That's perfectly fine for them to do that. But they think that the comics are without value and can be shared in fair use. But them posting them and typing, I like this comic underneath, if you want to tell people about that or quote that, you have to pay them money.
That is bonkers. I'm wondering if we could address this whole issue of fair use, because as I was saying just before we started recording, this is something I run into a lot in teaching, is I meet teachers and presenters who are so skittish about copyright use that they'll use examples of other people's work in their classrooms, which is fair use. They put up a slide deck or they put up some screenshots of things to discuss in an academic environment. And then I'll say, hey, can I get a list of the images that you used in your slide deck so I can follow up on this stuff later? And they'll say, oh no, copyright, I don't want to get in trouble with anybody. So, I'll put it on a screen and I'll let it be ephemeral, but it cannot leave this room. And they have this kind of hushed panic about it. It's unfortunate that so many of us are so skittish and, I guess, I don't want to say ignorant, but we don't quite grasp all the time, like, what the difference is between fair use and not fair use. And this is just an example. This PC Magnet is an example of somebody trying to take advantage of that. Rob, what were you saying just before we started recording about this?
Let's see. I think there's a lot of interesting dynamics to observe in that whole situation. You have the organization of PC Magazine and probably the mix of whatever staff they have, right? Probably different departments, maybe at least different responsibilities in a team who are providing, and controlling the service of PC Magazine and getting the articles out there. But, so which could lead to different perspectives. Someone saying, hey, I'm going to, publish an article and I'm doing some journalism and we're drawing traffic to the site. We're making people aware of a thing. I'm an advocate. Look at me bringing attention to this stuff. And maybe it's a totally separate role of someone else saying, well, my job is to notice, like, we have a new post and I make sure, like, we're making money off of what we do in every possible way I can, right? Or it's perhaps like a legal department saying, well, there's so much precedence regarding something and I just want to make sure that, I'm out there protecting our company legally or what have you, right? Probably not in an advocacy position of anyone providing content, but only, based on whatever the needs of that organization are, right? Not necessarily. I'm sorry, go ahead, Ryan. What's up?
Well, what I was saying, in talking to other people since I read the article, apparently this is like a business model for them. They do lists all the time, like especially their annual like best games, and they do all these lists and they like immediately send out messages to all these people and say, hey, if you want to put this on your box cover that we named you the best game, here's the price. If you want to put it on your blog or put it on your website, this
You're
is the
kidding
price. No, that's apparently their business model.
I'm guessing they must have been purchased or transformed, because I would assume that hasn't been something that established them as like a trustworthy source over the years, right? So good thing that people are spreading the awareness that PC Magazine is doing some weird stuff, because clearly they're abusing the concept of another observation I have is that I'm not a lawyer, but it seems to me they're abusing the concept of fair use. And playing on how, I don't know about you guys, but I don't really have every law memorized.
Right. Yeah. Right. We should say that. We should say that none of us are lawyers. Yeah. And so don't come to us for legal advice. But it is a good call to arms to say, hey, maybe we should read up more on this fair use thing and what it actually
exactly
is.
But we should. And so we should get informed. And so instead of our fear shooing us away from the topic, we should say, let's get rid of the ambiguity. Let's find the clarity here and say, well, what's fair use? And maybe even get a really good advocacy in organizations involved, like the Electronic Freedom Frontier, right?
Yeah, the EFF.
EFF. So the fear can have a chilling effect, right? So I'm just trying to get by. I'm just trying to do my job. You know, don't come after me, please. Can really get abused by those that are seeking a chilling effect. So
Ryan posted on all the different social sites, both on Google+ and Tumblr and Facebook, a great image. I should pull it up real quick because basically saying, oh, now I got buried in my feed. But people should go to google.com/plusRyanEstrada. Oh, here we go. I'll pull it up. There it is. Posted without permission. And so you can follow up. Ryan has links to it. What were you going to say, Ryan?
Yep, they're gonna hunt me down and give me a bill for posting that screenshot.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just like when you see like a trailer for a movie and they have like the quote from a newspaper. Like a lot of times those aren't even accurate. Like someone will say, this movie is shockingly bad, and the article will say, this movie is shocking, New York Times. You know, like they don't ask permission to tell you which quote you can say, and like they're just allowed to say, this is what someone said about me. And what Fleen was saying is that with PC Magazine, they even sent you a list of the things that you're allowed to quote. Like you weren't even, it wasn't even like, oh, I want to quote this, I'll contact them. They were like, here's what you can say, here's how much it costs. Creepy.
Well, and
So you could show up in an elevator and someone could say, or any public place, and someone could try to impose a weird set of rules on you and say, oh, you don't have purple pants, sorry. You know, and you could choose to obey those weird rules if you want. But I think they're using a false voice of authority to do this, just to be blunt.
Yeah.
Well, and Shadowingtronics is in the chat and he says, you know, if I post a review of something I like, I'm trying to draw traffic to them. When it comes to pull quotes, they should see that as free promotion for their site. That's the funny part, right? Is that if you're quoting PC Mag, you're giving them promotion, but you got to pay to promote them. That's the weird part of this whole thing, even beyond the fair usage thing. But
and that's the exact rationalization they're using for posting people's comics without permission.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so clearly there's a inherently in their proposition is cognitive dissonance, right? We're doing a thing. You can't do the thing. If you would like to do the thing, here's our terms. And that it really doesn't seem to stand up. But
well, and Ryan brought up that in his post about this was that there's an implicit suggestion that their content has value, but the web comics that they talked about have no intrinsic value, right?
Blow them off, right? Because that's picking on another. So let's see. Everyone who's making something is an artist, right? And I think a lot of us get, it can be hard to share your work and whatnot. I suppose that's a secondary tactic that they're using to be able to feel to come off as an imposing or forceful. Right, so they're implying no value, which weakens your position. So of course you need to be in a you're more open to their terms because you're weak, which obviously is false. Your work has value.
Anything else that we can add to this, or should we just kick into topic?
Just forget about them. Let's move on.
Exactly,
they're not worthy of discussion any further.
Exactly. Don't even
All right. So then I got to pull up the bridge music or the transition music as we go 10,000 feet up. discussing the topic in abstract for just a little bit. The whys before we get to the hows. The big ideas as we discuss freelancing. And I'm wondering, okay, so do we even need to say why should we freelance? I mean, I put that in the notes, but I don't even know if that needs to be framed up. I mean, is it a well-known idea of like why people freelance?
Well, I mean, there's just so many more avenues for comics than people can even imagine it. Like when I was doing Whole Story, the things that I did, a comic about how a payment processor works. I did like a thing for a trade show about how cool the CEOs of a drug company were. I did a comic for a senator about how good he was at dealing with gridlock, and I had to draw a gridlock monster and him fighting it. And I want to show that this is one of the coolest comics in my collection. This is a comic that I was handed out on the subway in Korea, and it's about how the cities of Gimae and Busan built a subway together, and Gimae felt that Busan was taking too much of the money, so they made a comic book about how it was totally not fair, and Busan should give them a bigger cut because they put in more work. And someone actually got hired, contacted, and was like, will you draw this comic book? And now it's being just like millions of copies distributed and handed out in the subway. Wow. So there's so many places your comics could go, and you don't have to just work for one company or get a job at one place. Like, just be open to opportunities and take them as they come. And some are good, some are bad, and you can pick the jobs that you want. And
yeah.
So
go ahead, Rob.
Inherent. So what we're saying is that is what you're saying, Ryan, that there is through that path is more variety, maybe new and exciting things that would be more common than if you were only doing a day job. And at mm-hmm. the same time, and it's not really mutually exclusive either. You could do both.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying there's lots of opportunities out there, and
totally
look for them and take them or don't take them.
That one of the things that I get from my students' parents when, like, the end of a session of the graphic novel class that I do every couple months here in town in Ann Arbor is they always think, "Wow, comics! There's no money in comics," you know. And then I have to do that thing over and over again where I say, like, "Well, they could work as a storyboard artist, they could work as a character designer, they could work in video games." And I point out all the different ways they can make their living, and then I explain to them. And this is where, like, sometimes, surprisingly, people in our generation as well have trouble comprehending this idea of, like, so you don't just have one job, you have like 40 or 50 little jobs all year long. I'm like, yeah, you know, that's the freelancer's lot. But it can be very interesting. And another thing that I've said before, probably on this show, is one of the things I love about freelancing is it's an opportunity for me to experiment on my work. Because if I don't feel creatively invested in the project, if I'm just doing it for the money, and often it's really, really fun work, but it's not something where it's a Jersey Droz production where it represents me as an author necessarily, it's work for hire stuff. I feel more latitude to be able to say, you know, I always want to try this weird technique. And I'd be too scared to do it on my own comics. I want my own comics to turn out absolutely just the way I want them to. So I'll play. I'll play with this job, right? And so I use it as on-the-job training, trying out new brushes, new techniques, new styles, new software. That's how I learned Manga Studio, was on a freelance gig. I just said, well, let's ink this in Manga Studio and see what happens. So there's a lot of good reasons to freelance, right? But I want to talk about the whole story, the-whole-story.com. You've got a new Kickstarter going on, Ryan. You want to explain the Kickstarter first, then we can go into the experience in hiring the artists for it? Because I think it needs to be set up with how many artists are involved and why.
Yeah, what I did, I've put together, with the whole story, every year I put together like a bundle of comics and people pay what they want for them. But this year I moved to a subscription service. So I wanted to do something different. And I have this story that I've wanted to do for a long time called Broken Telephone. And it's a series of 18 stories. Each story follows the villain of the story before it. Because the idea is that you know, everyone's the hero of their own story. No one sets out to do bad things because they're bad. Like the villains in movies and cartoons that just do this with their fingers and say, I can't wait to burn down this orphanage. They don't exist in the real world. There's a dude who works at a business who he has some weird rationalization in his head for why he needs to burn down this orphanage, but he thinks he's a totally good guy. So in this comic, I have a whole series of things, stories where all these characters, you show their worldview and why they think they're doing what's right. And each one has their own story. And so I thought it'd be really cool if I got 18 different artists to illustrate each of those stories, to kind of illustrate how different these people's worldviews and how different their stories are. And so, that's why I was on the hunt for 18 different artists.
And this hunt kind of inspired the How to Get Hired post, because I remember when you were doing the hunt, this was months ago, I remember seeing in your Twitter stream some frustrated posts about, like, I just found some amazing art, but I don't know how to get in touch with this person. I don't know who this person is. I just found their art. I found it on a Tumblr, but I have no way of knowing how to reach out to them and give them a job. I have money. I have money. Take my money. Where are you? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were people that, like, I'd look at, they had a whole webcomic. They'd been working on posting every day, and I'm like, who made it? Let me look for the About tab. Nope, there's no About tab. And I, like, who is it by? And it's just some weird, like, internet name with a bunch of numbers and letters in it and no email address, nothing. And I started contacting collectives that they were part of and being like, you should tell all your creators that they don't have any contact information. And one of the collectives is like, oh, well, they're too busy to be taking on other work at this point. And I'm like, so they're too busy doing their free webcomic that, like, I'm not saying my offer is so amazing they should drop what they're doing, but I'm saying that there's nothing else in your life that you would ever say yes to or any opportunities. Like, look at all the people who post YouTube videos of their babies farting, and then they're, like, contacted by the Ellen DeGeneres Show and flown out and given a car. Like, you never know what reaction someone's going to have to your work and what's going to come of it. Be available, man.
So I'm curious, Ryan, if we could characterize real quick what the difference between in your hunting for, you know, a cartoonist to be in the Broken Telephone Project, could you cite some examples of ineffective presence online and really effective presence? Like, when was the, oh, come on, like, what was going wrong with the moments where you were like, ah, I'm frustrated, and what was going right with the moments where you're like, aha, delighted, can't wait, here, I'm contacting you?
Yeah, another thing that was very hard is when people didn't have a personal portfolio site or a site with just their work. Like, they would link to their Tumblr as their portfolio. But the problem with Tumblr is that I'm scrolling through and you have all these reblogs of your friends' stuff and comics that you like and YouTube videos, and I don't know what's yours. Like, I'm either, like, scrolling past something you did and assuming that you didn't do it, or I see something that I think you did and I click on it, like, oh, it's a different person, and I go to their blog and forget all about you. Like, it's just really hard to figure out what you've done. So it's kind of important to have a place, whether people find you through your Twitter or your, like, old MySpace account, or your old LiveJournal, or some post that you did or a podcast you were on, you need some kind of link that they can click on to see who you are and what you do.
I'm checking my Blogspot right now to see if I have a link to my portfolio. I do. There's a link right in the sidebar. It says portfolio, and it takes you to my portfolio. Right. Oh, good for me.
One thing that sounds like, Ryan, it's like you sound like you want to be a client. You want to be you want to be a customer of these different people. And it's like the classic things when someone's offering a service, but yet not presenting it in a easy to consume way, right? So I'm available. You know of my talent or whatnot, and you desire my talent, but then I haven't really worked out the rest, which really kind of leaves it a problem for you, right? Mm-hmm. Did this all happen at once, or was it sort of a sequence of tricks and traps where you were like, oh, and now that they're, you know, this other piece is missing. Like, how did you put this the whole list together? Was it all at once?
Well, the list I just kept figuring out things as I was looking at people's work, and I'm like, oh, this doesn't work and this doesn't work. And finally I'm like, I'm going to just sit down and write a list of all these, and like trying to remember all the things that were difficult. But yeah, like people, like I said, you may not be looking for a certain type of opportunity right now, but even like, you know, people always say when you want something, you can't sit around and wait for someone to come to you and give it to you. Like, you have to be proactive and go out and get it. But as ridiculous as it sounds, sometimes it does happen where someone wants to come to you and offer you that opportunity. Like, even when I'm not hiring artists, like there have been times when I was editing whole story collections and I just wanted to put together a book of someone's existing webcomic and pay them a bunch of money and pay them a percentage of what people paid, and there was no way to contact them. You never know what kind of opportunities are out there, so be ready for them. So I wanted to make a list to help people be ready for those opportunities.
Do you mind if we sort of fly through this list?
Do it.
Well, do you want to go? I had that slated for On the Ground. Do you want to jump to that?
Oh, you did? Oh, yeah, I suppose. I just feel like we're teasing it so much. You know?
I know. Well,
I'm not telling you it.
I've been pulling it up on the screen while we've been referring to it, but yeah. We only got like one more thing in 10,000 feet up that I wanted to touch on real quick, and it's something that Ryan and I kind of hashed out on that ComfyCon panel, which people should go listen to. Go watch it on YouTube. Again, I'll link to it in the show notes. It's on Ryan Estrada's YouTube channel. It's at ryanestrada.com is your YouTube channel, right?
Yeah.
All spelled out, no actual dot. Ryan is not a dot com. Yeah. And again, we'll link to it in the show notes. But one of the things we discussed in there was part of the trick is identifying the kind of work you want to do, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a tricky business. Now, one of the things we've talked about a lot in the Lean Into Art show is Rob's coat of arms, which I wonder if you could go down it for us again, Rob.
Sure. Yeah, it's four parts. And they're essentially a way to ask yourself a set of questions, and they're meant for you to fill in the blank. So it's almost like a coat of arms engine, right? So here they go. First part, I'm seeking to do what I love. Second, to for a community I care about. Three, using tools and methods I believe in. And four, to engage in a sustainable trade.
And that is a really great rubric for evaluating whether or not you want to take on a gig. Right.
Exactly, but it doesn't prescribe, oh, it's precisely this kind of work. And right. I think there's some interesting complexity among those different choices, too.
Well, that could be comics, that could be film, that could be video games, that could be 100 different things, right? But does it match all four of these qualifications, right? And as far as my own life is that I just identified exactly the kind of story I like to do. So it's really easy for me when engaging with a freelance gig. If they say, oh, well, there's a scene that I want to do in the book where a guy comes in with one of those big chain guns like in Commando and just mows down a bunch of children. I could say, oh, that's great. I can't draw that, or I won't draw that. That's outside of the scope of the kind of things that I do. It's really easy for me to identify jobs that I want to do and jobs that I don't want to do because I've defined, like, here's the Jersey Joe's kind of stories, right? Ryan, I wonder if you could share how you landed on knowing, because you're, as we talked about on the ComfyCon panel, your definition of what you want to do has changed over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, you want to everywhere to link to what you do, and you, like you said, you need to figure out what it is first. And make it clear what type of work that you do and want, and that's how you attract the types of opportunities that you want. Like I said, when I first started, I don't want to confuse my sites again, Cartoon Commune, which was my freelancing site, everyone was ordering superhero comics, so I posted all superhero comics, and then that became like a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's all anyone wanted was superhero comics, even though I had no interest in drawing them. So I spent 4 years drawing something I didn't like. So that's why every time you post something that you're passionate about, your personal webcomic, your artwork, you post on your Tumblr, make sure that either in your bio on the social network or in the post or somewhere there's a link to that site that shows people this is what I like to do and this is how you get in touch with me.
So it's a simple matter of just create things that you love to create, and then that story will reveal itself to you over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all it is. Like, you don't have to sit and make a business plan or anything. Just like that, like you said, you make the comics that you like to draw, and I know by looking at your stuff and listening to your thing. You know, I had a comic with a prison riot. I know I'm not going to hire Jersey to draw the prison riot. I'm going to wait until I do the kids only, all ages whole story bundle, and that's when I'm going to come to you.
I'm excited about that. I'm so there. Okay, well, that was really all I wanted to just kind of.
No, I think that's really cool. I want to throw a little extra button on it where I think that's really powerful it acts as a mutual matchmaking filter when you actually are doing the thing that you love, because people are recognizing that if you're caught in so if you're doing things you don't love as much, maybe you don't want to link them in as readily, so to be accessible. So it's like doing what you love, sharing it, be accessible, emphasize the love stuff, right? Versus I don't love this as much. Maybe I did this to pay the rent.
Yeah, and if there's something you're not proud of, there's no reason to post it. Don't waste your audience's time. Don't give people an idea of you that isn't true. Like I learned when I started doing Cartoon Commune, as I've said on the show before, I started posting every comic that I did for every drug company and every wedding and everything. And, you know, these are like 24-page comics, and my audience that likes my comics are like, oh, a new comic by Ryan, let's read it. This is really boring. I don't know any of these people. I don't care about this pharmaceutical company. And then the next time I post something I like, they're like, well, last time I...
Whoa. You guys still there? Did I lose you?
We were artists working together and showing each other what we worked on. But like, if I wouldn't bother to walk 5 feet to show someone, why would I show the entire world this thing? And that kind of worked for me.
Hey, cool. So, can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
we Jersey's totally back.
Me. Sorry about that. My internet went out for a minute there.
Yeah, and so just a quick recap. Ryan was just sharing with us an interesting rule of thumb that had to do with when did he notice maybe it was time to take a different strategy with what he was sharing, and so what's the John rule of thumb? Do I show it to John?
Yeah. Would I walk 5 feet to show this to one person? If I wouldn't do that, why am I sharing it with the entire world?
That's kind of awesome. Okay, nice. I mean, it's a little, so we're getting, that's a little bit of a helpy kind of thing, but maybe that's a perfect sort of note for us to transition into some on the ground, some tactical stuff.
Going on the ground. All right, so now it's time to get practical. Talk about some things that, now that we know we want to freelance, and like some things to think about before diving into freelancing, or like once you're underway doing some freelance work, how to fine tune your freelance career. Let's talk about getting those jobs you actually really want. So you want to talk about that post now, you guys? What do you say?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what I try to do with the post is it's a list of 10 questions. And what I suggest people do is just close their eyes, clear your mind, go to your own website. Not even just your own website. Anything, anywhere people could find you on the internet. Like Google your name and just click any of the links. And figure out, ask yourself these 10 questions looking at it as an outsider.
I think that's a really, really great way to go at it. All right, let's talk about some of these questions. I'm going to pull them up on the screen. We can discuss them point by point, just a few minutes each. So, question one, what is the first thing people see? Let me go to your website. Right. So, what were some of the first things you saw when you were looking around, Ryan?
Well, like I said, a lot of it was tumblers. And the first thing I'd see was a petition to, get this show back on the air, or a YouTube video of a cat. And like I said, there's nothing wrong. Like, sharing things on Tumblr is awesome. That's what you do. But like, at the very top of your Tumblr, you have that little strip where you're allowed to post a header and post some of your own artwork, or post a little link that says where I can find your work. Just figure out what image do you want to present and present that. Because if not, if all you have is the name of your Tumblr, and a lot of people, you know, they get their clever names for their Tumblr, that I don't even know who you are. You're just like some weird sentence, and right. It doesn't say what your name is. Like,
Pudding
tell
fish.
Me your name. Yeah. Puddingfish.tumblr.com. All right. I don't know who you are. Just like, you can call your blog Tumblr Puddingfish, but then also say your name, have a picture of your work, have a link to your website.
Mm-hmm.
Because all your, you know, even a lot of these are famous artists, and their readers all know that Puddingfish is the Tumblr of blank, but someone finding it is like, what is this? Who is this?
Right. So, okay. And then I wonder if you would advocate doing like a squint test or something like that with whatever art you want to put on there, because I think, or is that in here? Is that, am I getting ahead of myself?
I thought that was kind of number five.
Yeah, that's in, yeah.
All right. I don't want to get ahead of myself. Let's go to point two. How many clicks? Hide your work. Interesting choice of words, Ryan.
Yeah, there's a lot of personal portfolios that I go to that the first thing is an enter button. Like, it's friggin' like 1990s website design.
Flash intro video.
Yeah, flash intro video. Mm. Just, and it's never someone's best work. It's like a very simple picture, enter. And I just typed a name or clicked the link to go to your site. Obviously, I want to see it. Why are you giving me extra work, dude? And and then even like once you click that, a lot of times you'll see just like black text on white that says portfolio or drawings, paintings, whatever. Like, just show me some work. I can click on a thing to see more of it, but there should be something there. Something that you're most proud of to make me want to click a link. Because a lot of people, like, the work I put into hiring some people, like having to, like, okay, there's no link, let me Google this person. Oh, there's a bunch of people with the same name, let me type Google their name plus comics. Now it's like, oh, that's not working, so I have to like look for clues, and I feel like I'm solving a mystery trying to get in touch with this person to figure out who made it, even though they're the ones that posted it. Like, that happens a lot when people take people's names off something and repost it. But this is something you posted on your Tumblr. Why can't I figure out who you are?
International Artists of Mystery. Not the best customer communication strategy, huh?
We should pull up. I'm going to pull up Ryan's website real quick. And here's, you know, an example of walking the walk, right? Right. Hi, I'm Ryan Estrada, artist adventurer. And this is that tagline thing we've talked about before. It's like having like a good tagline of, what's your job description? What do you do? Right? Visual storyteller, if nothing else. You could just say visual storyteller. And then here are some comics I made. I also make videos. And here's all the social places you can follow me. You know, pretty straightforward.
I'm gonna make it as easy as possible for people. Any of those things you want to read, you click on the cover. Oh, you're reading it immediately.
And it's got this nice hover over thing where it changes.
In an earlier version of my site, it was just it was like a blog, and so the latest thing you came to see would be those commissions that I didn't like. And if you want to see the comic that I did like, that's scroll next. I made it 2 years ago, so people got to put in the work to see what I want them to see. So it's the same thing I said when I was talking about conventions. Figure out what it is you want people to do when they visit your site and do it for them. Put the work that you like. Another thing that's helpful is watching other people look at your site. Because I like, even the, before I did this recent update, like, I'd see people go to my site and like hover over. I'm like, don't click that. That's not my best work. And I'm like, why is it there? So just put exactly what you want people to see.
Yeah, that's like doing essentially it's quick usability studies, right? I mean, if you're sitting there by someone and you ask them, hey, we use this thing to try to accomplish this goal, and then do everything you can to not interrupt them and just let them do it. And, you know, let them know, I'm not testing you. I just want to see if this thing communicates well. And then step back. I mean, and amazing things happen. You'll get, it might be hard to watch, right? But it's informative. So it sounds like you totally changed the priority of what you had presented, like where it was and probably how big the different elements are and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
And everything's still there. It's just the stuff I want you to see is one click away. The stuff I don't want you to see is two clicks away. Or the stuff that I want you to see after you see the stuff I like is two clicks away.
Mm. We should say, though, that this is very tricky stuff to navigate because a lot of us who are freelancing, who are also doing our personal work, we're serving multiple audiences, right? Like one of the things I struggle with the Comics Are Great website is, who's my audience here? Is it people who listen to the podcast, people who want to hire me, people who just enjoy my work and maybe want to buy some of my books for entertainment, right? I'm trying to navigate three different audiences at the same time, or actually four, because then there's information on there like who wants me to do a school visit because I teach, right? So that's a lot of different audiences mm-hmm. to try to service with one web page. So it's not, this isn't an easy recipe. This is something that takes a lot of fooling around with. And yeah, usability studies and watching people interact with your site is a great way to figure out different audiences interacting with your site would be probably something you'd want to do as well.
Well, exactly. I mean, each of those things that each of those services you're trying to provide represent yet a different goal. And some of them might conflict with one another. And, well, which ones are most important? And just go through the hard work of prioritizing those things. It's not easy and can take multiple tries. But if you get that feedback, you'll notice if it's doing anything, of course, watching your stats. So do you have analytics on your site too, Ryan?
I guess I still do from a long time ago. I don't really look at them anymore.
I assume then it's all about your business goals. Like, you know, are new customers coming and that kind of stuff?
What do I want to happen and is it happening? And the key to doing all that is just be upfront about everything. Be upfront about what you do. And if you do more than one thing, just say it, say the things that you do. And, Jersey, you have on your site the little boxes, like the little cartoon thing. Like I forget what it says. Do you want Jersey to do an event at your school?
Right.
Like that's very clear and easy to see. If someone wants that, that's the button that they click. Just be upfront about what you want and have it easy to find on your site.
Let's talk about the next point. What work is yours? What work is yours? And this, like you were talking about Tumblr earlier, this can get tricky, right? If I'm posting, because like some advice I got years ago about blogging was just blog about the stuff that you like. So sometimes I'd blog about things like toothbrushes. I got one of those Tooth Tunes toothbrushes that played the Transformers theme when you brush your teeth. And it made me unreasonably happy because it started with the transforming noise that it kicked into the theme song. And I was so happy about it. I blogged about it, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm like, well, does this need to go on the blog that I'm posting on my, you know, portfolio website or like in my professional website, or does this need to go someplace else? Right. And also I might be posting, Tony Cliff just did some amazing posters for Delilah Dirk, these travel posters, and I post them in my blog. You should go read Tony Cliff's stuff. What happens mm-hmm. then? And then, Ryan, you talk about this. Like, if that happens, I'll click those links, and I'll forget I ever saw you, right?
Yeah. But, that's great, though, like to have – like you. That's how the internet works. You want to share things. You want to talk about things. Right. And that's what social media is for. But at the top of that social media should be that link to the site that has only your stuff. Because if someone goes to your blog and wants to see your stuff, you don't want to make them put in the work to figure out who you are and what you do. That seeing how excited you are about those toothbrushes and how excited you are at Tony Cliff's work is what makes us realize that maybe we have the same interests as you. Maybe we are also excited about these things. I want to see what Jersey does. So instead of like scrolling to each post, did he do this? No. Scroll, scroll, scroll. Did he do this? Yes. Like, at the top, like I said, Facebook has that little strip where you can put an image, put some of your work, and then your bio should be comicsaregreat.com. People click that, then they see your work.
Right. Rob, did you have anything to throw in that before we go on to point four?
No, let's move on.
Do you have undead landing pages? This one is big, because as somebody who every time a new service pops up, I run and try to squat my name. The first thing, one of my first hard learning experiences in building a presence on the internet was I had the chance to get jerseydroz.com and I turned it down. The URL was available back in like 2002 or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's arrogant to get my name as a URL. I'll get something else. And now I wish I would have gotten jerseydroz.com, but now it belongs to that base guy. So now whenever like a new service pops up, like, oh, Postgres or whatever it was when it came out, I'm like, I better go and make sure I can grab jerseydroz.postgres.com, you know, c.me. I better go try to see if I can grab Jersey on that. And so I have this trail of all of these unused sites, right? And so what do we do about that, Ryan? What do we do when we've got a trail of undead sites behind us?
Yeah, the places people can find you. Like, whenever I get emails of people that say they just found my work, it's never, I went to www.ryanhestrada.com. It's always, oh, I saw this old post you did in a live journal. Even it's I saw someone else talked about your work on their blog. Like, you never know. It could be like a retweet that you did. Like, people are going to come to your work from anywhere. So look at all the places they could find you. And, like, if you have an old live journal account that's just sitting there, there's different ways you can do it. Like you said, you have used if then then that to actually put your new content on there. I'll just go and do a post like once a year that says, this is the stuff I'm working on these days. Check it out. It's cool. You can follow more of my stuff here. And a lot of things like old blogs that you have, like these kids today, they don't understand about the RSS. I know it's us old fuddy-duddies use it. But what you don't realize is that, like, you look at your number of Tumblr followers, you have a lot more than that because some old fuddy-duddies are following you on something called RSS, and every time you do something, it goes into their reader. And so, like, there's a million people that still have you in their reader just because they're too lazy to clean it. Or they're just like, well, maybe one day he'll post something else. So you have, like, all these mailing lists of people who really want to see your stuff that you didn't even know were on your mailing list. So if you post and say, hey, I'm doing cool stuff now, this is where you can check it out, they're going to see it. Because it may have been a big thing for you to move to a new thing, and you may have posted about it, but someone missed it, and someone just thinks you disappeared off of the internet.
All right. Now we get to one of the big ones. This one, I think, is a really important one. Where is the contrast? This is where we get to that squint test thing I was talking about earlier. And I'll just read the first line of this. Tape your work to a wall and walk to the other side of a room. This sounds like a crazy hypothetical, but I literally want you to do that right now. Can you tell what's going on? This is huge, right? What do you mean by contrast?
This one isn't so much about your web presence. This one is just about your work itself, because that's the one thing I've noticed when I go to conventions, because the other thing I do is I translate a lot of Korean books for whole story collections, and I go to Korean comic conventions. And a lot of times I'm also exhibiting, so I have to go around and look at like every book on the floor and like 10 minutes away from my table and hoping no one steals my money that's sitting by the table. Like, so I'll just go and like flip through a bunch of books and go to the next table and flip through all the books. And the biggest thing that I notice between professionals and amateurs, or things that catch my attention and things that don't, is that just there's no contrast. And if I stop and look carefully at some of this work with no contrast, that it's just this beautiful line work and amazing art, but the way our mind works, our eyes need something to focus on. And if it's just a bunch of line work, it all becomes just gray. As you flip the book, it just looks like a bunch of gray pages. But if you vary your line width, if you fill in black areas, even if it's a color book, like if everything is one tone, it all becomes gray. You need some things that are dark, some things that are light. Just a simple matter of, like, you can take a single page and just color someone's jacket or someone's hair in black, and all of a sudden it's like when you frame a picture, it just pops out. So that's why I suggested, like, just print out a spare copy of your art and just attack it with a marker. And it may not look right the first time, because contrast is all about balance. You want some stuff, you know, you may go too far once and just make it all black, which is still not contrast. It's just all black instead of all gray. So just play around and makes things look different from others.
Rob, I imagine you deal with this a lot in user experience design, right? How contrast works to guide our eye as to what you want people to interact with. Yes?
Yeah, certainly. Squinting at an image is really helpful. Even if it's not across the room. Across the room is a great exercise too, because it keeps you honest, because you're not going to magically get, telescopic vision. It's going to be far away, and you'll notice sort of a hierarchy of emphasis or a lack of it, and say, I'm not sure where things begin here, and where am I supposed to start? Because maybe this is the best piece of information ever, but there's something else calling me right now. All right. You know what I mean? Like this is ambiguous. I don't see where I can, start to unravel all this. And then, that's one of the best things that contrast can provide. So when in interaction design, you're thinking of, maybe a flow of it, maybe have the heavy duty, the anchor that's pulling you in. This is where you start. This is the, you know, and a lot of times it depends on the platform. There's all sorts of things, and you have to test your assumptions. So doing usability testing and whatnot, because of different, it varies by culture. It'll vary based on accessibility. If you're help providing something for audiences that aren't depending on the sense of sight to consume it, that kind of thing. Anyway, contrast still comes into play. Where's the emphasis?
It seems like what a lot of these tips are coming down to is don't make your audience do the work. Mm. Like with contrast, like I said, I've seen so many books that have just amazing line work, but it's all like 0.6 micro, and like I don't know what to focus on, and just show your audience that. And it can go the opposite, where if everything's too bold, to use an example of like web design, there's kind of I was reading an article recently about Japanese website design, where every website looks like it's like one of the very first GeoCities pages, and like everything's blinking text, and everything's in Japanese writing, there's no like bold, because it's not lettered, like it's all symbols. So they want to make things stand out by like making like red on yellow and making things flash and making things move forward, but they do that to every bit of text on the page. So your mind is just like, whoa, what am I looking at? This is scaring me. And it's hard to like, you want to tell the audience, this is what's important. Look at this. And then this follows this. If you don't give contrast, whether it's on a website or in a drawing, the eye is just like looking around. All right. I don't know what to look at, and move to the next thing.
You talk about homework. Are you showing me your homework? As a guy who shares a lot of his process online, this one hit me in the ribs. I do wind up showing a lot of process stuff, and perhaps I need to figure out another way to facilitate that content, right?
Well, that's different, though. What I'm talking about isn't process, because when you do a process post of something that you're really proud of, you're saying, this is how I made this thing. You're becoming a teacher, not a student. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about is people that have like the flour sack test, or the basic homework that every animation student has, or they have their figure drawing from their intro to whatever class, and they don't have anything personal on their website, or maybe they have one thing they did for themselves, and the other things are things that they did for homework, and what that's telling me, like, these are the things that you do in order to learn how to do the thing. Like, you can't do a process post until you know what you're doing.
Okay.
And these are the things that they do to learn how to do the things that they can then teach in the way that you do. But if that's all you do, it's saying you haven't made any art yet. You're just learning how to make art. And so post things that you've made that you love, and not things that a teacher told you to do and that you weren't quite sure about and you got a B- on. So let's show it to people and hope it gets me a job.
I see the distinction there. Yeah.
That helped too. I was confused on that one. That's cool.
So as an employer, Ryan, if you didn't know me and you saw like when I did that He-Man, the Masters of the Universe post, and I had like, oh, here's all the source files, here's the pencils, the inks, and the colors. I'm going to show you how it all came together. Here's a video of me working on it. As long as you see the finished thing, right, that shows this is what you get when you hire me, the process stuff doesn't stand in the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even if I don't see the finished thing, if I'm seeing your pencils for something that you personally have created and is cool, that's something that's going to make me want to see the finished thing. But for a pencil sack test, anybody doesn't know what not a pencil sack test, the flour sack test,
right.
Pencil tests, it's both. Anyway, this is something that animators do where like they want to practice how motion works. So they just draw like a blob shape of what looks like a flour sack moving and jumping. And there's no finished product there. It's not moving toward anything. It's moving toward that person figuring out, oh, that's how you do motion. So when I make a thing that I want to make, I know what his body should be doing. So it's, like I said, it's posting your homework instead of posting your work.
Right.
I've run into that too. I think I know what you're talking about, especially with if someone is really just starting to build their portfolio. I'm guessing it's probably tempting to include that exercise from figure drawing class, but then it really looks like you included the exercise from figure drawing class. You know what I mean? It's not, I don't know. I mean, maybe is there sort of a, what if someone does something exceptionally interesting with that exercise? Like, has a laser gun and is, I don't know, jumping from the earth to the moon. Right.
Yeah, if it's something that you've made that's art, like if you made a conscious decision to use that as a storytelling tool, that's awesome. That's I've seen lots of, like, there's lots of student films that are like about like a bouncing ball or things, just because it's something that all people that in animation school know about. Like it's just a storytelling tool, and if it's something you're proud of, do it. But know that. To kind of be conscious of the fact that people are going to be like, this is definitely student work, and kind of weigh the pros and cons of what are people going to, you know, what am I trying to do with it and what are people going to see from it? Like a lot of amazing paintings are done from live models. That doesn't mean you can never post something from a live model, but does this look like I made something I wanted to make, or does it look like my teacher said, do this, so I did this?
Mm.
Right.
Very good.
Point seven, we kind of already talked about a little bit, like the whole, are you proud of this? You know, you talked about like when you were doing Cartoon Commune and you were doing all this freelance work and you were sharing all that stuff, it became not only what represents you, but obscure as to what the meaning of the piece was because you were doing it for some insurance company or something. But then this little snippet you put in here, I think, is the interesting one. Talk about this is like understanding why we should only post things we're absolutely really excited about. As you say here, several times this week, I had a Gmail tab open with the draft of a job offer email open, then scrolled down two more posts in the artist blog to see a really bad phoned-in comic, and then deleted the draft.
Yeah, if I see something that is really terrible and I'm like, now I don't know. Do they think this is good? Like, I don't know if they have the self-awareness to know, like, which of these two things am I going to get? Because if they can't tell the difference, then I may well pay them for something and get this thing instead of this thing. Like, I don't know what the difference is. Mm-hmm. Did they spend more time on this one than this? Is this an old one? Is it, you know, there's nothing wrong with posting an old comic if you had, like, if it's just an interesting thing about myself. Oh, here's something cute I drew when I was a kid.
Right.
But make it clear that that's what this is. Because if you just say, like, post it as though this is what I do, then people are going to be like, okay, that's what this person does. I don't want to pay for that.
All right. Point eight. What do you offer that no one else does? This is a term that goes around on the internet quite a bit, that people talk about your unique value proposition. What is it about you that's unique? What is your idiosyncratic special value? And you say in the post, it's like, you know, like, oh, well, I can draw exactly like Katie Cook. That's my unique value proposition. To which you would say,
yeah, I'll hire Katie Cook. Like, there's so, like, I was surprised. Like, I expected, there's a lot of sites that I went to that was like Marvel style Spider-Man pages or drawings of Superman that looked almost exactly like Spider-Man or Superman comics. And what that does is create kind of an uncanny valley effect where, like, it looks almost right, but the only thing I'm doing is mentally comparing how the real thing is slightly better. But I was really surprised by the Katie Cook things. Like, there's so many sites that just blatantly, like, her exact style, the way she draws a little word balloon with the pink heart in it, like, they're all holding kittens. And I'm like, I'll just hire Katie Cook. I've done it before. I just hire Katie Cook. And yeah, like, even if what you want to do is draw Batman and Superman, by only including that work, like I said, you're just making people realize how far from exactly right you are. So post something of your own in a similar vein. Like, you know, like, if for example, if I work for Mattel and I want to do a He-Man comic, like, if I want to hire Jersey, like, I can look at his stuff and know, even if I'm not looking at his He-Man piece, this is the same kind of tone that I want, this is the same kind of feeling that I want, the same energy that I want, and I can know from that and then see also, oh, he did this He-Man piece, this is what the characters would look like. So give people an idea of what you do yourself instead of just how well you copy them. Even your He-Man work is in a different style. It's in your own style. So I'm not just saying, oh, this line is a little off, this line in his face is different, his hair is a little shorter, because I'm seeing your version of something, and I'm seeing it next to your personal things that I can see how you would do something different from what's already done.
Yeah, it's... So finding your voice isn't just a creatively rewarding thing. It's also a very practical thing. It also, greenbacks figure into finding your voice, right?
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. I suppose it's a reason to...
I'm sure if you wanted to, you could do a really great recreation of what He-Man looked like in the old cartoon. And you could post that on your blog and it'd look great. But when I looked at that, I would only see the slightest differences.
Yeah.
And maybe I would think it was better, maybe I would think it was worse, but I'm not going to be thinking about this is what Jersey does. I'm going to be thinking about that doesn't look quite right.
What are you going to say, Rob?
No, it is interesting that even it. So if you're drawing something that you love, and it's bringing up Jersey's example of the Masters of the Universe series of posts that you did is great as reference for this point, because so if you love Superman, Spider-Man, Batman, whatever, Wonder Woman, you're drawing some known thing, there probably is, like, if you explore Jersey's posts on this, we really got to include him in the show notes. You're like, Jersey is sharing his rationale and how he feels about it and the kind of essence of the character and sort of his thought process and what drove his expression for those characters and, like, some of the trade-offs and, like, the different design choices and how they sometimes just felt right or sometimes had a lot more, you know, reasoning behind them as well. But either way, it all just kind of points to this is Jersey's voice.
Yeah.
And not just, I love He-Man.
There was a lot of that, though.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just that.
Yeah. And if you want to, if that's what you want to do is, say, work on the existing He-Man comic and you want to prove you can draw in that exact style, well, first of all, you have a lot of competition now because there's already someone who draws that in that style. They're the ones that drew the thing you're copying. So you not only have to compete against them, you have to compete against every single person who also wants to draw in that exact same style. But if I want something that looks like that Master of the Universe thing, there's only one dude I can go to. And if you do your own style, if you do something that no one else can do, you have no competition. And for the people that want that, you're the man they come to.
That was point nine, right? What opportunities do you want? And you end with that point. If you make art, no one else can. And this comes back to that originality thing that we run around again and again and again, and originality is your spin. That's what makes it unique, and that's your unique value proposition, is your point of view, your worldview, your approach, your take. And again, we talked a lot about that during that ComfyCon session. And then point 10, I think this is the final one, isn't it? Who are you and how do I get in touch with you? It's a simple question.
Yeah, a simple question that often does not have a simple answer.
I mean, were there really, like, well, actually, now that I think about it, there really, in the past, when I've done things like the Sugary Cereals Project, I remember people sending me links to their sites, and they would say, like, oh, here's where you can find my stuff. And it would be like a DeviantArt page, and it would even, you know, maybe have like two or three things in it. And I'm like, it wouldn't even be sequentials. It wouldn't even be comics pages. And I'd be like, well, how
DeviantArt. I can't figure out how to contact people on DeviantArt. I found stuff, and like first of all, anyone not on DeviantArt can't contact you at all. And I try to join it, and then I try to figure out, like, it's just so confusing to me. Maybe it's part of that being an old dude thing. I just can't figure out the DeviantArts, but just have a link to some, like, an email address. Just do it. Like, and but even there, even people's sites that they built themselves, just no information at all. I don't get it.
Yeah, I actually got contacted by a reputable company through Facebook, of all places, because that's where they saw the thing, right? Somebody reshared a thing I did, caught the eye of somebody who worked at a really nice art agency, and then all of a sudden I get this private message through Facebook, and I almost never check it. So it was just a stroke of luck that I happened to be checking my messages. And he's like, dude, I don't know how to get in touch with you. He's like, where is your email? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I put my email everywhere. And I looked on my about page on Facebook, no email. I was like, oh, God dang it. That was the first thing I changed. Like, this is where you reach me, right? And never mind the fact that on my Facebook page, it has, this is my main site, Comics Are Great, where there is a contact page. But it's all about that easiness, right? The guy was on Facebook when he found the thing. He wanted to reach out to me right then, went to my about page, saw that there was no email, so messaged me, right?
Yeah. Well, even like sometimes when I would find things on Tumblr and I couldn't find a website, I'd try Googling them. There was nothing. And it's I'd have to like weigh the pros and cons. Like there's that fan mail option or ask, or that I can click ask and give them the job offer in an ask, but the way that works, like, if they click the wrong button, that's going to go public. And I don't want my job offer, like, I'm telling them secret things about a project and giving spoilers for it, and, like, giving the secret link to all the information and all that, like, it. So I'm like, am I going to risk this, that they're going to click the wrong button and mess this up? Or, like, are they even going to see this? Like, what if it just goes, like, a lot of people don't really use their ask box, so it might sit there, and I have a spot I have to fill. Am I going to sit waiting to see if they check their ask box? And finally, I'll just be like, I'll just hire someone else.
Well, and Tumblr's messaging system is, at least in my experience, and this could be me being an old guy, but I find it really difficult to use. Like, I had people contact me through the, not the ask button, but like through like some kind of private messaging system that's built into it. And they'll ask me a question, and then I'll respond to it, and it won't show me my response. So
it disappears. Your response disappears, and once you've answered it, their question disappears.
Oh, so I don't know what happened. I have no idea what happened to the words.
That's the way it works. And even like I'll be like, oh, that's, I'll answer their question and be like, enter. I want to see what this person does. Oh, it's gone. Where'd it go? It's okay. I can't even.
Yeah, that's so. Email is an old technology at this point, but it's pretty ubiquitous. Everybody has email, or 99% of people who are going to want to give you work have email, right?
Mm-hmm. And just be ready to, if someone does contact you through another means, be ready to answer it.
I want to talk
check
about
your inboxes. Yeah,
I want to talk about what happens once you get contacted a little bit, because this wasn't in the list, but this is something I think both of you can speak to a little bit. Rob, as somebody who did a fair share of interviewing about a year ago, and then also Ryan, as somebody who reached out to people and had to negotiate a gig, Can you guys characterize a proper response, or an effective, I should say effective response to an inquiry? Hi, I have work for you. You know, what, like, an inquiry email could be like, and this is the kinds I've gotten, is, hey, I've got a really exciting project that I'm working on. It's going to be due in a month. Maybe I'll give you a sense of scope in terms of pages or how many illustrations. Do you have time? Are you interested? And that'll be like the inquiry email that I'll get sometimes. It'll be that mm-hmm. vague, you know. The gig comes in. What do you do? I mean, what's an effective response to that?
Well, for me, what I found most helpful is when people were just upfront and like a lot of people would like wait 2 weeks to answer the email and be like, I'm not really sure if I have time to do this. Let me think about it. And I'm like, dude, I filled that position like 2 weeks ago. Or I'll like be waiting. Or they'll, you know, just give a vague response. And I find it, you know, if there's not enough time, say there's not enough time. If it's not enough money, say there's not enough money. But like, I am not going to be offended by any of those things. And the best thing is just respond, because there's a lot of things that I send out that people never respond to because they don't have time. But so I'll never contact them again. And then I have had other people that say, this sounds interesting, but I got a lot of other things going on right now. But, you know, thanks for thinking of me. Contact me in the future if you have any other projects. And I have contacted them in the future when I had other projects. So just be upfront and open about what your availability is and how you can be involved or how you can't be involved.
I would add to that. One way to look at it is you're offering a service and you have to service that service. So if someone's reaching out to you, it's part of your, you know, being accountable for offering a service to deal with it in some deliberate manner. Not all offers have the same amount of sincerity, or maybe it's a really bad match or whatnot. So maybe you have to start to, you know, find a way to gauge it. Because I mean, well, some people will just do keyword matching and not really have a sincere offer, or be looking to just reuse your stuff for free or what have you. But, you know, so filter. But if there is that sincerity, that means you've probably found a customer either now or in the future, or a client, right? So it's worth engaging in that relationship, just like Ryan described, where it may not work out right now, but if you're direct, I would also add, know your terms. Figure it out, like what do you, you know, what is your rate? And just, it is what it is. And whether, you know, project-based or whatever your approach to dealing with your rate is, just be straightforward.
Yeah, the benefit of when I ran Cartoon Commune was that I had a flat rate available on the web. And so everyone that contacted me knew what that flat rate was. But even if it was someone that didn't contact me through that site and they said, can you draw this thing for $10? I could just say, link to that and say, well, my rate is $250 a page. I wouldn't have to say no. I wouldn't have to say that's not enough. I wouldn't have to argue back and forth. Just be confident. You know, don't say, oh, well, maybe a little bit more. Be confident in what you do and what you do it for. Mm-hmm. And if it's about price, say, well, my rate is this much. If it's about content, like if someone wants Jersey to draw the Saw comic, then Jersey could say, well, this is the kind of thing that I do.
Right.
Be upfront. And then, you know, there's no reason to burn a bridge just because you're not interested in a project. Like, not responding is burning a bridge.
Yeah.
If you're upfront and clear, maybe that later that person, you know, if someone gives you an insulting offer, maybe they don't know it's an insulting offer. And if no one tells them, they're just going to be like, well, these artists never respond to my emails. But if enough people say, well, this is my rate, then they're going to be like, well, let's get a budget together. Or maybe they'll be like, well, making this book isn't for me because I don't have the budget for it. But maybe down the line, they're going to have a budget for a project. Or maybe down the line, they'll be like, okay, now I need to now I need this He-Man comic drawn. Who do I know that doesn't draw gore, but they like to draw He-Man?
Right.
And then there they go.
And
you can pass the one way to service it too is you can pass the baton to your network, right?
Yeah.
Who else do you know that would service this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, Jersey. No,
it's fine. And I've said many times on the show that I suck at email. I really suck at email. I'm very bad at managing it, and sometimes people have to ping me twice or three times to get a response on something. I get buried really easily. But one thing that I respond to within the hour, obviously not when I'm sleeping, but when I wake up in the morning and if I see an email and it's a money email, if it's a job email, that one gets answered fast. And I always try to answer it in as few words as possible, not obscuring anything, but clarifying everything. What is the information that they need to know, right? So if somebody says, hey, Jersey, I got this gig. It's about this many pages. It's going to be five storyboards for five TV commercials. Do you got time? And I'll say, well, here's my availability. Here's, if you want, X amount of frames, I can complete it by this time. If you want, this amount of frames, I can complete it by this time. Here's my rate, X amount of dollars per frame. In black and white, X amount of dollars per frame in color, just let me know when you got scripts in hand. And if you get them to me by Friday, I can get started right away kind of thing. But I think about what is the information they absolutely need to know. And I always, always say, thank you for giving me the opportunity to work with you on this. Always. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing I say. That's the last thing I say in every email that I do with my clients. And if it's something I can't do, where like they'll say like, hey, can you do these technical drawings of car interiors? It's Friday at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We need them first thing in the morning by Monday. And there's 30 illustrations that need to be done. And I say, I can't do it. I mean, not even with a rush charge could I fit that in over my weekend. And they say, okay, well, we'll find somebody who will. And I'll say, okay, well, thanks so much for thinking of me. And if you have any other illustration gigs that are coming down the pipe that you want, that you need some help with, I'll be here, even though it was an unrealistic goal to throw on one artist, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, if you feel wishy-washy about answering that, like, just imagine this guy has a rush job, and, that may be an extreme example, but like I said, when I was trying to hire people, I had 18 spots I had to fill, and if someone's like, oh, I feel awkward about saying no, and they wait a week to answer, that's a week less that the person I end up hiring has to work on the job. So think of your fellow artists and think of, not just them, the client, you don't have to, the client may be being unreasonable, but still give them a modicum of respect and also give respect to the other artist that's going to follow you that is going to have half the amount of ridiculous time if you spend half of it waiting to answer the email.
And how much do you, Ryan, how much did you appreciate it when you sent an email out to some of these prospective artists for the whole story and they got back to you like within an hour? I mean,
that was amazing. Like, yeah, even the people that said no, like 5 minutes, awesome, I can send, because, I didn't want to send out more spots, more emails than I had spots, because then I'd feel awkward and be like, oh, I offered the job, but you can't have it because I gave it to someone else. So I'd like send out like 5 emails at a time and like I'd sit there waiting and waiting. And then someone would answer, I'd be like, thank you for saying no. Now I can send out another email. Yeah. And it's great. And a lot of them were very friendly emails. And they're like, this sounds cool. Let me know when the Kickstarter goes up because I want to buy it. Some of them were just, whether they say that or not, just it's very polite to do. And it, and if they say their reasons, then I know next time that if I have another project, it might work out then.
And then even offering them alternate availabilities for things like this happened to me very recently. An agency that I do a lot of work for said, hey, we got 6 frames for a storyboard for a TV commercial. And they said, can you do them today? Like they emailed me at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon and said, can you do them today? And I'm like, there's no way. And plus I was just about to go out of town for something. And I said, oh, thanks. So, first of all, I said, thanks so much for thinking of me or giving me the opportunity to work with you on this. And then I said, unfortunately, I'm just about to head out of town. I won't be back until Saturday. I could get it done for you Saturday. Would that work for you? Right. They said they wanted it today, but I gave them another option, right? Instead of just saying like, no, I can't do it and I'm really sorry. Or, well, I guess I'm not going to answer that because there's no way I can do it today. I got back to them right away, thanked them, and then said, here's another day I could do it. And guess what? That worked out for them just fine. So as soon as I got back from my trip, went right to work, did some storyboarding. So
And that same thing happened with the whole story where When I was hiring people, you know, the date for the finished comic is further down the line, but I needed within the next couple of weeks, I needed like some preview art or character design because people were sharing characters within the stories. I needed character design for other people to work from. And someone, an artist that I really love, I wanted him involved. I made him that offer. And he's like, this sounds great, but I don't have any time in the next 2 weeks to do that design. And I was able to be like, well, that's totally fine. If you do this story, there's no character that overlaps, and therefore I don't need that. And so I was still able to get him on board, whereas if he was just like, I don't have time in the next 2 weeks, then he would have, like, you know, he wants to do the job, he's excited about it, he would have missed out, and I would have missed out because his work is awesome, and I wanted him in the book.
So are there any other thoughts that we had on this? We got a couple questions in the chat that I was hoping we could get at before we mention quests again. But I wanted to make sure that we covered everything on this whole idea of freelancing. Anything I missed? Anything that we wanted to cap this with?
Well, I just wanted to re-clarify, just because you have to be available for any work doesn't mean you have to take any work. Be available, listen, answer the emails, but if it's something you don't want to do that you're not comfortable with, you might want to add in the show notes, I can't remember the name of it, there's that thing that Neil Gaiman, he did a talk, and he talked about how at one point he decided that he wouldn't take a job until he decided, is this going to get me closer to where I want to be? And if it wasn't, he wouldn't do the job, even if it was well-paying, even if it was prestigious. It was taking him in a different direction from where he wanted to be. And so take only the jobs that you want, but be available to get those offers for the jobs that you may want. And don't, while there are people like me that will go out and find people to give opportunities, whether they like, you know, not say that they'll like it, but see if it's a match. If there's an opportunity you want, you have to go out and get it and not just sit and wait.
Big one. That's a big one. Mm-hmm. And that's one that I've fallen astray on before, where I've done work that I really did not enjoy because, well, the money's, well, I don't want my opportunities to dry up, right? You, like when the job comes in, it's like, well, I kind of have to take it, right? I have to. Mm-hmm. There, I love that idea of like picking the ones that bring you closer to where you want to be. And that's more that self-knowledge stuff that's kind of hard to come by or hard to arrive at on your own. Rob, what are you going to say?
Well, even then, so even if you did, if you're in the situation where you have to, that's one moment in time. There's the next job, right? Every single one of them is a chance to continue to refine all the things we've been talking about as far as, you know, way of putting yourself out on the internet is attracting those kinds of people. What kind of emails help you close the right deals? What kind of all that stuff is it? You keep working at it, right? It's not like you failed because you accepted one thing that was because you needed to put food on the table.
It reminds me of the thing you said on the Extra Lean show. We're in a room with failure.
We are, and it's a bummer.
But that's all a great point, is that, yeah, you get to be judicious, right? Like that job I was mentioning before with the technical drawings of the interiors of cars, that is not something I wanted to do anyway. And there's this wonderful, rewarding feeling you get when you turn down a job that you don't want to do. Because when you work like a proper, real grown-up job, right, the boss can come in and say, guess what? You're doing this extra thing because this is, you know, I'm adding this to your workload. And you don't get to say, not necessarily, you don't get to say, like, no, I choose not to do that. Right?
I prefer not to.
I prefer not to, but oh, guess what? You're going to do it. And turning down a gig can be very scary, but it also can be immensely satisfying, you know? It's this weird little rush of power. I get to choose my fate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
All right. I want to take some of these questions on. Joe Gillespie in the chat. This is going back to some of our earlier talk about websites. He says, let me hit the select thing so it'll be timestamped. Says, my blog is Tumblr, but I use my domain name, blog.joegillespie.org. Is that a bad move? Should it just be joegillespie.tumblr.com? Why would that be bad?
I'm not sure the question. Does blog.joe Gillespie redirect to Tumblr? Or is that a separate site? What is?
No, he redirects his domain, blog.joegillespie.org, to his Tumblr that he uses as a blog.
No, I don't see any. I mean, it's just a different address. As long as somewhere on there is a link to show what you do and not just blog posts. I mean, unless, like there's different ways to use Tumblr. Some people use it as a portfolio and they just have a set number of posts. And then some people, like I said, have, that's the same place that they have all their reblogs and everything. So.
Yeah. And actually I'm at it right now and I'm not seeing anything that says portfolio. It looks like an art blog though. It's his stuff. Mm-hmm. And that much is clear.
Anything inherently wrong, but at the same time, all this applies. Like, so when someone does arrive, what can they do? Think of the, what verbs can the customer act upon when they get there? Mm-hmm. Is it, if it's only read blog posts, it's not connecting the dots between them arriving and then getting to your goal of saying, well, let's try this matchmaking arrangement. Like maybe you're the right customer and I can serve you. And we have the similar interests. If they can't start the conversation, then.
Okay. Now, how do I contact Joe Gillespie?
Right. I'm not seeing that information on his Tumblr.
Uh-oh. Hired. Sorry, Joe Gillespie.
I could follow him on Tumblr. But
yeah, that's cool.
But other than that, and I can heart one of his posts, I can reblog it. But I don't see any information about what's the verb? What, they go to blog.joegillespie.org and then
call
what
me,
happens?
Email me.
And it may not necessarily be his goal. What is Joe? What is your goal when people visit this site? Do you want them? Mm-hmm. Like right now, the only thing I can do is follow. I can click follow, and that's cool. That may be what you want people to do, is to follow and see your work. But is there something you've created that you want them to buy? Is there do you want them to hire you to do new stuff? I'm not seeing how to do any of that.
Right. Well, cool. But there's nothing inherently bad about using like a custom URL. Like my portfolio is on Tumblr. And actually, we can if we're gonna poke at his, let's poke at mine too, just to make sure I'm on the right page. Mm-hmm. jdrozd.net. I'm gonna go to that and I'll pull it up on the screen. And here we get my. Is it loading? Here we go.
There you go. There's all the information. See, right, first thing that loads is that image that shows your work.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing it loaded was your name and your contact information and what you do, and then your work, and then a bunch of examples of it.
And just my name and my job. What? Go ahead.
Yeah, like custom URL is great. Like the shorter and you can get it, and the easier to share. Nice. Like I keep the address to my Kickstarter is actually kickstarter.com/project/ryanestrada/broken-telephone-the-whole-story-2014. But I'm not going to say that on the podcast. but I've redirected the dash, even still the dashes are annoying, but the-whole-story.com is much easier to say. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, someone already registered the-whole-story.com.
We could say the whole story with dashes between the words.
Mm-hmm.
.com.
Yeah, that's pretty efficient.
Yeah, just make it easy to say.
Yeah, and so Joe Gillespie is very brave for submitting his site, and we kind of did a little like ad hoc critique on it. So sorry if you weren't.
Sorry.
You weren't ready for that, Joe. Sorry. critique is kind of it's a really special, it's more intimate conversation. What's like, are you ready for this kind of thing? And yeah, I'm interested. I'm ready. It's like you get past that little handshake, and then it's like, all right, it's on. And but anyway, so but. Yeah, and robstunzinger.com used to point to my Tumblr, what's funny, but now it points to essentially a mini portfolio site.
Oh, let's pull that up. And there it is. So, all right. Design systems for people.
The other nice thing about having a custom URL is that if you decide to no longer use Tumblr as your landing site, you can change it and yet people still have the right address? Do you still have the right address on your business cards?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So in that regard, like having a URL is a really good idea. It's hard to have that not work out well because it does put you in control where you point it.
Very definitely, especially when we start talking about undead pages or undead social services. The first thing I do, hopefully, is put jdros.net as my portfolio link on whatever service I'm using, right? Now I don't have to think about going back like, oh, now I got to go update my About Me page. I got to go to my, you know, my blog spot. I got to go to my LiveJournal and DeviantArt. Those links are all still good because, yeah, I moved my portfolio off of WordPress and moved it to Tumblr because Tumblr, I don't have to think about updating the software. So, so yeah, I think a custom domain is actually a really good idea. And maybe you can get a better one than jdros.net because I was stupid and didn't get jerseydros.com.
yeah. Well, another example of like how people can find you anywhere. When I redid my site, like I said, originally it was a blog. And so everything had, like every post had that long thing that was like ryanestrada.com/content/the date/whatever. And so I got rid of all that and just made it myself with my own little, like very simple names for everything. But there were one or two posts that had like gone really viral on like StumbleUpon or Reddit. And a lot of people were linking to those particular things. So I had to go in and on my new blog, create a folder called content, then a folder called 12964, whatever it did, and put all of these folders inside each other so it had the same URL as my old WordPress system made, so that when people clicked that link on a 10-year-old StumbleUpon post that was still being reshared, like they would still find the content that they wanted.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, we have one more question, and then I want to button this one up if we can. So Shadowingtronics says, sometimes I see somebody went to my contact page but never wrote anything. Is the contact form enough, or should I risk posting my email and brave the spam bots? Should we be putting our email address out there for the world to get? I did on my portfolio site, but what do you guys think?
Gmail takes care of that stuff pretty good these days. They clear out the spam.
So it depends on where you're hosting your email. If you're running your own email server, probably not. But if you're using a big service, it's less of an issue. And another strategy is, and it's not mutually exclusive, you can have multiple email addresses. I share my professional email address all over the place, but I keep my personal one under my hat.
Well, my email address is literally everywhere. Like I posted on Twitter, like to someone asked me a question, I posted in comments, and I get a very minimal amount of spam. Gmail does a good job of filtering it all out. And I hate using contact pages. It's like a lot of times they don't work or people haven't updated them. I much prefer to just send an email. So I say, get your email address out there.
Yeah, I use Gmail entirely for all of my email services, which may or may not be a smart thing to do depending on where you stand on that kind of thing. But one thing I will say is that, yeah, the spam situation is almost non-existent on Gmail. It's amazing at spam. So, yeah, thank you for that question, Shadowingtronics. Anything else? Okay, so are you guys feel good about cutting over to just briefly plugging the quests real quick?
Mm-hmm. Do it.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. No, we're not discussing the quests. We're just giving a plug for the quests because there's two more weeks to participate in quest number 10, This Character is Lying. We did get a couple entries so far, but do you want to describe the quest real quick, Rob, and then how people can participate?
Yeah, so this is meant to be, as with all the quests, they're essentially like a mini art challenge. Spend as much time as you want, but what we've been trying to do is make them like quick and satisfying, like a tiny little treat. And essentially how we do that is we divide it up into these little quest cards, and each is like an activity you'd find in like a fun magazine in a way, except in this situation there's three quest cards that all chain together under the premise of this character is lying, and it's about exploring the juxtaposition of the like sort of the your goal as a storyteller and what a character says versus how they look. And so in this series of three cards, you start out with editing some dialogue, which can help you get closer to what you want to say get one aspect of how you're going to get impact out of this. And then the second is looking at ways to show the dialogue, ways to pace it and whatnot in your word balloons. And then to look at a facial expression you would be pairing with it. And and as far as how you do these quest cards, they're just PNG images. So you go to leanintoart.com/quests, download the images. What I do is I put them on my Samsung tablet. I throw them in a big sheet in what's the app?
Layer Paint.
Actually Papyrus, because I can do it in one big page. Kind of fun. The last quest I did that way, I thought it was really fun. But yeah, I mean, so you could do it pure digitally or print them out and snap photos, whatever. But by making them in little bite size activity sheets, that hopefully makes them, you know, quick and easy.
And then when you finish them, you share the results, tweet about your challenge, you share the results in a blog post and on Twitter with the LIA Quest 10 tag.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even a button at the bottom of the quest that where you can tweet it out. So, and we on the next episode we will be reviewing the quests that were submitted, and look forward to talking over the work that you guys did and the work that we did. What's the deadline on that? Well, let me look it up.
So, December 4th, 2013.
December 4th, because then the next show will be December 5th. Oh my God, 2013 is almost over.
I know.
So one more thing we got to plug. We got to make a big deal about this thing. 22 days to go at the time of this recording for Broken Telephone. Oh, and I'm going to see if I can play the video on here. Because people need to see this. This is so great. See if this works. Are we seeing it? Yeah. Okay. So the Kickstarter video, Ryan just clobbered it. I already told you this like three times, Ryan. But you just clobbered it with this video of you riding a bike doing the pitch for the whole the Broken Telephone whole story, and there's kids running behind him, happy children. Oh, this is so great. It's worth it just to watch the video alone to visit the thing.
Yeah, if you could see the weird mount that I had on my bike to do this thing, like I did not have the equipment to do something like this is so easy to do these days with the right, like if you have a GoPro, but I was using my MacBook Pro connected to the web, same thing I'm using now, connect with my giant studio mic taped to the bicycle, and my MacBook Pro in my backpack with a cord running to a webcam that's on, like I had made a thing out of sticks and wire
Rob, are you hearing that?
Yeah, I'm hearing that.
Your audio, Ryan, is in a continuous loop, getting like this dubstep thing going on with your audio.
Yeah,
it's gone now.
Dig it. Well, I want to do a light switch rave. So yeah, all right. Let's just complete the thought here on the whole story, right? So, we've got essentially a collection of comics that, I mean, it's a little bit different angle. Last time, I supported the prior horror whole story, which was an amazing collection of comics, like a crazy abundance it's a good price, and it's Ryan has a well arranged machine that where essentially all the money goes towards supporting the artists, and that's a pretty cool system, and he curates some really great collections and some fun work, and then this one has the whole premise of like this bigger story that's like in sections called Broken Telephone that I don't know everything about it, but I know I want to read it.
And the cool thing is, like, you can pitch in a buck and you get a digital subscription to all 18 issues of Broken Telephone. But then there's really awesome reward tiers going all the way down to where you just get more and more and more insane amounts of comics to read on your tablet or your computer. Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh, including the prior, much of, if not all of, the prior whole story. If you, at a certain tier, which is, you know, completely nuts because that's a ton of comics. So I feel like I'm a shill when I say that kind of thing, but like this is just, you know, just reacting to the, it's a lot of really good stuff.
Well, I've said before, I think this is the future of anthologies. I think this really is the future model of anthologies. And this one is like a really weird hybrid anthology where it's a graphic novel that's also an anthology. Actually, you know, it reminds me a lot of, Ryan, is what are those movies? The I Heart or I Love New York and I Love Paris. Is that what those were called? Those like with all the like the little connected vignettes. Ryan, do we lose your audio, Ryan?
Might have lost his audio.
Yeah, I think we did. We lost. Well, Ryan is still here in spirit. He's still in the hangout, but we can't hear him.
Testing, testing.
Oh, there you are.
Oh, hey. All right. Now I'm back.
Uh-oh.
Something when I showed my microphone like it's back talking about the bicycle, something broke.
Oh.
It's all this time we've been talking and I thought we were talking over Ryan, but he couldn't get through even if he wanted to. But anyway, so people should go to thewholestory.com with dashes between the words, the-whole-story.com. And check this thing out. Watch the video of Ryan riding around on the crazy bicycle with the happy children and pitch in to get some amazing digital comics. You won't be sorry. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And get it for a buck. That's less than 5 cents a comic.
That's completely nuts.
That is completely nuts. So let's make this thing happen for everybody. So, okay. I guess that's the main thing that we want to point attention to, right, Ryan? Is there anything else that you wanted to?
Nope.
All right.
Simple, all right. Straightforward.
So, Ryan, thanks again for concluding this three-part discussion on finding work and making a living at this Comics Jazz. And we will link to the other things in the show notes, that the other parts of this talk. But if you guys enjoyed this discussion, another thing you could do is you could go to iTunes, you give us a star review. Don't even have to write a review, just however many stars you think we deserve. Or if you're watching this on YouTube right now, a great thing you could do is give it a thumbs up if you enjoyed it. That helps more people find the show. So, and thanks to everybody who hung out with us in the chat. Thanks again to Ryan Estrada of The Whole Story. And Rob, thank you. This is a fun discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Jersey. And thank you, Ryan. This has been, it's been a lot of fun. And of course, I look forward to when we start our next trilogy.
Yeah. All right. So until next time, everybody, I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of leanintoart.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
And I'm Ryan.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart. And you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.